Letter number 48, May the 4th, 1987. Assisi explained, hell is empty. An interesting letter was made public recently in Germany. It was written on December 3rd of last year by the Catholic Vicar General of Berlin to a layman, Herr Gierczyk, who had written a month beforehand to the Holy Father personally, asking if he could or might take part in masses celebrated by Catholic priests in the St. Peter's Chapel of the Society of St. Pius X in Berlin. Here is the letter. Dear Herr Gierczyk, the Secretariat of State of Pope John Paul II has forwarded to me the letter you addressed to the Holy Father on November 9, 1986, and has asked me to give you an answer. To the question you put to the Holy Father, the priests of the Society of St. Pius X are validly ordained Catholic priests. The Catholics who follow Archbishop Lefebvre belong to the Catholic Church. Whoever attends Mass in St. Peter's Chapel does indeed fulfill his Sunday obligation, but at the same time he is acting against the unity of the Church, of which the sacrament of the Holy Eucharist is sign and cause. Hence, you cannot be forbidden to attend Mass in St. Peter's Chapel, but you cannot be advised to do so either. Having thus fulfilled my superior's orders, I remain cordially yours, Johannes Tobey, Vicar General. Of course, whoever knows the teaching of the Church has always known that society priests are valid priests, that those who follow Archbishop Lefebvre are in the Catholic Church, and that no one can be forbidden to attend a society mass. What is unusual is that a high-ranking official of the Novus Ordo Church should admit as much. Naturally, he also inserts the criticism of traditionalism for acting against the unity of the Church, but the conclusion he draws from it, that they, quote, cannot be advised, unquote, to attend a society mass, is remarkably weak when compared with the fulminating prohibitions to attend which we have all up till now heard from so many Novus Ordo bishops and vicars general. Thanks be to God. For at the beginning and end of his letter, this vicar general, Johannes Tobey, seems to underline that he is acting under orders coming from on high. This is in line with a few other indications we have from Rome that Cardinal Ratzinger and Pope John Paul II do not want the Society of St. Pius X to be broken up or to disappear, because they need the society as a counterweight to the extreme radicals within the Church. If this is their way of thinking, it is all too human and political. It is not the thinking of Catholics, who will take their stand on God's truth and let Satan's chips fall where they may. However, it is to the credit of these leaders' Catholic instincts if they do not want to see the radicals tearing the Church apart, and these instincts of theirs are surely being used by God to write straight with the crooked lines of their all-too-human politics and of their deadly liberal principles. Just how deadly these principles are, Catholics must realize so as to be forewarned and forearmed. The still surviving Catholic instincts of these liberal churchmen may be enabling God to shield, for instance, the society, but their implicit, explicit liberal principles, no objective, unchanging truth, no coercion by any divine law, have enabled Satan to ravage the Church, and there is much worse yet to come. Hence the length of this letter. It encloses the full text of the official theological justification of the October Day of Prayer in Assisi, delivered as a speech in Rome on December 23rd of this year, before the assembled cardinals, archbishops, and bishops of the Roman Curia. Correction. It encloses the full text of the official theological justification of the October Day of Prayer in Assisi, delivered as a speech in Rome on December 22nd of last year in front of the assembled cardinals, archbishops, and bishops of the Roman Curia. This speech and our analysis are difficult reading. Take courage. Your Catholic faith and Christendom itself are on the line. The essential error of this December 22nd speech is naturalism, or the emptying out of the supernatural. Another word for it is modernism, or the disfiguring of Catholicism to make it fit the naturalist modern world. Our faith tells us that the sole purpose of the whole natural order of human souls and bodies and all the animal, vegetable, and mineral creation all around us is that the natural human souls, when they come to separate at death from their bodies, should contain God's sanctifying or supernatural grace with the supernatural virtues of faith, hope, and charity. Whatever a man's merely natural gifts and achievements, if he dies without supernatural grace, he damns himself to eternal hellfire. Now, because Adam fell from God's grace, we are all of us born in original sin without grace. And because Jesus Christ alone restored man to grace, we must all of us, without exception, accept the supernatural gift of faith in Christ, convert to him, and receive his sacraments, starting with baptism, to preserve and increase supernatural grace in our souls. Hence, our absolute need of his Catholic Church, sole authorized and normal dispenser of the Redeemer's supernatural sacraments and sanctifying grace. See now, in this speech of December 22nd, what has become of this entire structure of supernature or grace. It has been entirely made void. Lest we be accused of distorting by omission or quotation, you have in your hands the entire text as printed in the January 5 issue of the weekly English edition of the Osservatore Romano, issue number 969, pages 6 and 7. Correction. Lest we be accused of distorting by omission or quotation, you have in your hands the entire text as printed in the January 5 issue of the weekly English edition of the Osservatore Romano, number 969, pages 6 and 7. Only the title has been changed, lest you be seduced by the smooth words. Judge for yourselves if the following is a fair summary of the essential first 10 sections. 1. Just before commemorating Christmas, my mind goes back to the outstanding religious event of the past year, Assisi, where the divinely established but hidden unity of mankind became visible despite men's divisions. 2. To expound the full significance of this great event, we must interpret it in the light of Vatican II, which was both fully traditional and fully in touch with modern needs. 3. Vatican II connects the identity and mission of the Church with the radical unity of all men, consisting in their having been all created by the one God in his image, on one plan, to go to him, a radical, fundamental, and decisive unity, dwarfing men's differences. 4. This one plan centers on Jesus Christ, outside whose work no one can remain, as he died for all, wills all men to be saved, and Vatican II is in some way in contact with all men. Assisi showed this unity. 5. To bring about this divine unity of creation and redemption, the differences arising merely from human weakness must be overcome, because however unaware men are of their radical unity, still Jesus Christ, quote, has in a certain manner united himself to every man, unquote, Vatican II, Gaudium et Spes. 6. Hence the Church's identity and task consist in her working to heal the merely human divisions and to form the people of God to whose Catholic unity all men belong or are created. 7. Vatican II invited the Church to discover in all religions the traces of this hidden but radical unity which Assisi manifested in the living, albeit incomplete, communion of all the religious representatives there. Thus Assisi fulfills the commitment to ecumenism of Vatican II. 4. Vatican II's decree on ecumenism, number 8, correction. 8. for Vatican II's decree on ecumenism tells how Catholics are already united to other Christians through faith and baptism. Its declaration on non-Christian religions tells us, quote, to recognize, conserve, and promote the spiritual, moral, and social values that are found in them, unquote, because all men are oriented by God to himself. 9. By thus putting into practice Vatican II's teaching on the unity of all men, Assisi has reinforced the very identity and self-awareness of the Catholic Church, which now better understands this divine unity. 10. Through all her multiple forms of ministry, active and contemplative, the Church works to bring out the unity and reconciliation of all men, and now by an Assisi-style ministry as well, etc. End of the 10-point summary of the speech of December 22nd. This landmark speech says that Assisi reinforced the very identity of the Catholic Church. 9. Archbishop Lefebvre says that Assisi is destroying it. Someone must be way wrong. They cannot be both right. Let us summarize still further the essential argument given above in 10 points. Even more briefly, the Catholic Church's main business on earth is to form the people of God by bringing together all men in the unity of their God-given creation, redemption, and orientation to God. Men may be unaware of this unity, often lying hidden within their nature, but beside it, all man-made differences are of little account, and so the Church's function is to bring it out, hence Assisi. Still more briefly, men's religious differences matter little. We are all one with God by our mere nature. However, if man-made differences are so unimportant, Numbers 3, 5, 6, then the sins of schism, heresy, disbelief, and infidelity matter little. Indeed, sin is rather to be regretted than blamed, number 5. Then neither faith in Jesus Christ matters much, number 8, nor does conversion to him, because however bitterly we may refuse him, still he has somehow united us to himself, 5. And so schism, heresy, sin, faith, conversion are all of little account. Moreover, if the misuse of our free will is unimportant because, albeit unawares, number 5, we cannot remain outside the work of Jesus Christ, number 4, and we all belong at least by orientation to the Catholic Church, number 6 and 8, then all men are in effect saved by their nature alone. Then, no one having human nature can be damned, and so hell is empty, sanctifying grace is not necessary, original sin is not worth mentioning, free will and its choices are inconsequential. What scorn for man! The cross and the sacraments must be mere symbols, and the Catholic Church is needed only to proclaim that man is great by his nature alone. Numbers 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. In brief, forget about anything supernatural or above the order of nature. Nature on her own, 4, 7, 8, 9, brings us to God. Now, it may be objected that the speaker does not openly commit the heresy of naturalism, that the consequences spelled out above are not explicit in what he says, that he would repudiate them if they were put before him. As to the speaker in person, this may be true. If so, then he would lack the obstinacy in denying known truths of faith, which is necessary to make him a formal heretic, especially if there's nobody in authority above him to admonish him. However, if he were in person to repudiate the clear implications of his own words, then, while escaping the charge of formal heretic, he could not escape the charge of grave inconsistency, of having a mind adrift between Catholicism and naturalism, which is not a Catholic mind. But, as to his words, in contrast to his person, they still mean what they say. Are they not consistent with one another throughout this speech? Are they not, moreover, fully consistent with the actions of Assisi? Are they not, in addition, wholly consistent with certain teachings of Vatican II? Brackets. How could the claim that Vatican II was perfectly Catholic in his documents survive the reading of such an anti-Catholic speech built, number two, on quotes from the documents of Vatican II? Close brackets. In truth, just as the liberal Catholic is a walking contradiction, so this speaker is consistently inconsistent. If, then, he occupies a high enough position in the Church to be addressing the assembled cardinals, and if not one of them is known to have protested against such a speech, then the whole official leadership of the Church would seem to have cut adrift from its supernatural moorings. No wonder if the poor Catholic in the pew is almost hopelessly confused. And thank God for at least two bishops who raise their voice in clear and Catholic protest. They are a sheet anchor for the whole Church and the two very best friends of the Holy Father, who may seem to be shielding them by his instincts, but is surely fated to cause them much more hardship yet by his principles. He is in very grave trouble, but as heaven told the little children of Fatima, we must pray for him all the more, and we must fasten our spiritual seatbelts. A flyer from St. Mary's, Kansas, presents the grand correction. A flyer from St. Mary's, Kansas, presents the grand annual opportunity to visit and get to know St. Mary's, a great refuge for Catholics in the middle of the United States. And next month you will receive a flyer for the second series of three tapes made by Bernard Jansen and myself on obedience, the priesthood, and the seven ages of the Church. But send for them now if you like, $4 apiece or $10 for the set. All is well at the seminary. Seminarians are just returning for the last part of the school year, beginning with the lovely month of May, when each evening, in honor of Our Lady, they will be praying the rosary in front of the Blessed Sacrament exposed for your intentions. No one but Jesus will have inspired his Church to dedicate to her the loveliest month of the year. Mother of the Church, pray for us. End of letter 48.